negotiating team in a lump sum, and then the union decides how they distribute it out. And for instance, in Bay City, until the board kind of intervened, guess who got all the big money? It was the people that had been there the longest with the highest degrees, because they were the ones negotiating the contracts. And this other teacher that I just mentioned, it was like 9 years before she got a substantial raise. So
right.
There's a lot of subtleties of going for higher education and the motivations behind it and so forth. And actually how we pay for it is a little problematic at times, because right. Sometimes there's no limit to how much the teachers can just go and sign up for more education. They're all entitled to it.
Right, right. Thank you. I appreciate your call, Jim, and Merry Christmas to you. We're going to head to the phone. Let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to Vermont's senior senator, Pat Leahy, is joining us. Senator, good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Mark. Glad to be with you. And Merry Christmas to you.
And you too. I want to talk a little bit about what's going on with the change in the relationship with Cuba. Last week, the president and the Cuban president announcing to an exchange of prisoners, and also this idea of opening up and establishing diplomatic relations. And you obviously played a key role here, going down there with another senator and congressman and retrieving a captive, Alan Gross. So, Senator, why now? What's changed? Why now after 40 years?
Well, it's actually even 50 years, and it's taken a lot of effort. It didn't happen all at once, as you can well imagine. I've made several trips to Cuba. I met first with Fidel Castro when he was president. Actually, Marcel and I spent several hours with him one evening, and then with Raul Castro on different occasions, and the other key members, the foreign minister and so forth. I've discussed this with various presidents, but I had long talks with President Obama, and I said, you almost think that there's this memo to the president that says, hang tough, and these Castros will be out of here if we just hang tough. Of course, that memo was given to President Eisenhower, President Kennedy, President Johnson, President Nixon, President Ford. I mean, you get the drift. We tried the same thing through 8 presidencies. It hasn't done anything except hurt the Cuban people. The Castros are still in power. I think, and we look, the United States looks silly throughout the hemisphere. You say, here's this huge, powerful country acting as though Cuba is their great enemy, and yet we deal with Russia, we deal with China, and other countries that disagree with us on so many things. And the time was right. They were holding Alan Gross, an American who was there on a USAID program that never should have been set up anyway, but he was being held in prison. I visited him many times in prison. My Tim Reeser from my office did.
Yeah.
And I recall one time saying to Raul Castro, you know, I've got my airplane out here. I can take him off your hands and bring him home with me.
Mm-hmm.
Reach over and patted my arm and said, nice try.
Mm-hmm.
But every meeting I had with President Obama and his team and with the Attorney General and with First Secretary Hillary Clinton and Secretary John Kerry, we all knew that things have to change. It accomplishes nothing doing the same thing for 50 years and getting no results. So a whole series of negotiations went on. I was involved in some of them in Cuba and in New York and Washington. Others were carried out very quietly in Canada because the Cubans could fly to Canada easily. Our people, of course, could. And the Canadians gave them secure rooms where they could meet. The Canadians knew what we were doing. Nothing of it ever leaked out. And then about a week or so ago, in fact, I was making plans to head off to Vermont. And a call from the White House said, hang tight. I think this is coming to a conclusion. And here's what happened. It was almost like a John Carre novel. We took the backup to Air Force One down to Cuba. We landed one airfield. Another airfield, they land with three Cuban prisoners that we'd had locked up here. Another airfield, a plane lands, and they turn over to us a spy that we had from, with the CIA, had been locked up by the Cubans for 20 years, facing possible execution. And they were on their cell phones as their people walked off one plane. Our people walked on the other plane. The foreign minister was there. I talked with him. He said, I know you like coming to Cuba, but maybe you ought to come for more than 20 minutes at a time. And I said, yeah, I got to get him home. And then we flew back. And it was kind of emotional. I sit down, Gross, who I'd been in contact with and visited many times in prison. I said, Alan, we're watching the computer in the plane. I said, we're over American airspace now. You're free. And he slapped me, threw his arms around me, and he started to cry. I said, Patrick, I can barely believe it.
How is this kept under wraps? It's amazing to me that this story didn't somehow get out.
Well, we knew that if it did, the whole thing falls apart. And very few people were involved. Tim Reeser from my office was intimately involved. He would take these very quiet trips to Cuba, meet with people there. But, and I met with others. Usually I'd meet with their foreign minister in New York City because he could fly up to the UN and we could meet there. I would brief the president one-on-one, and I didn't put anything in writing except for a couple of things. I brought a letter from Castro to the president and sent one back. I also arranged a letter to the Pope urging him to speak with the president when the president, was meeting with him, which he did. The Pope then sent a letter. I mean, it really gets fascinating. I mean, it's all coming out now, but the Pope sent a letter to Cardinal Ortega in Cuba to the president. I had arranged with a friend, a mutual friend of both the Popes and Cardinal Ortega, retired cardinal here in Washington, and Theodore McCarrick. He went down, met with Cardinal Ortega. He speaks perfect Spanish. We arranged for him to come in through a, I mean, it sounds cloak and dagger, but not through the regular visitor's door, to the White House, delivered the letter from the Pope to the president. And I think what Pope Francis said to both Castro and Obama was very, very powerful. I don't know if any other pope could have had this kind of influence, but he did. All the pieces just finally came together at the same time, and we knew we'd have to move right then because we were afraid things would leak out and it all fall apart. And President Castro and President Obama spoke at length. Next morning, President Castro released 52 prisoners from jail in Cuba. And, of course, our own spy that we wanted back. And I told the president when we got back, he called us in the airplane to talk about it, but when we got back, I could be on a more secure line. I told him I really worried that if we'd waited any longer, it might break, and he felt the same way.
Mm. What difference is this going to make to your next-door neighbor in Middlesex?
Well, for one thing, Cuba is the... We Americans can go to any country to let us in. Our country will allow us to go anywhere except one. They won't allow us to go to Cuba. We have agricultural interests, and Vermont would like to do more trade with Cuba, especially the Holstein Friesen. We have companies in Vermont that would love to be doing business with Cuba. There's a lot of things in the medical field that we can do with Cuba. But I think that what I hear from a lot of my neighbors. It's funny you should ask this, because a number of them have called and saying this is wonderful, because they could never understand why a powerful nation like the U.S. would treat a small country that way. And it will improve our standing throughout Latin America, the U.S. standing throughout Latin America. All these things benefit us. Canada and every one of our allies had relations with Cuba except us. And they felt that there was something wrong with us and not doing it. So it will have an immediate effect tomorrow? No. A long-term effect? Very much so.
But does it prove that sanctions aren't effective? And if so, why are we doing it anywhere else in the world?
I think sanctions, depends on what the sanctions are and where they are. In a small country like this, there are enough people, enough countries, including our allies, who totally disagreed with our sanctions. And so they would help. I remember one of my meetings down there, I went, and this seems strange to think of this, in Havana. I went to a meeting of the Chamber of Commerce. Just think of that for an oxymoron.
Yeah.
And they had people from England, Canada, France, Germany, Mexico, I forget which other countries. They all said, oh, we love your embargo. Keep your embargo, because we can do business. We don't have to compete with the United States in doing the business. And I think they're only half joking when they said it. So the embargo, it created problems, but the embargo is actually an advantage. I told both Raul Castro and Fidel Castro, you ought to love our embargo, because everything that goes wrong in Cuba, a lot of things went wrong, you can just blame it on the United States.
Right.
I just got a wry smile back from them on that one. But now there's other places where sanctions do work. Look what's happened in Russia.
Right.
Because we were joined by all our other countries. The ruble has plummeted. It is creating real economic consternation. It is certainly hitting Putin and his billionaire friends, have been skimming off so much money from the extractive industry like oil and gas in Russia. And ultimately, that's going to bring pressure on them. But that's something where our allies join with us. In Cuba, I mean, even our closest friends like Canada, England, France, they thought we were out of our mind.
How do, so if this diplomatic relationship is established, so how is the U.S. going to, or can it, monitor things like how human rights are dealt with down there?
Well, it'd be easier to monitor it. We monitor it now. We have an interest section. We're actually technically part of the Swiss embassy, just like the Cubans are in Washington is technically part of the Swiss embassy, the Cuban interest section. But our freedom to move about and their freedom to move about in the U.S. will be greatly improved. We monitor a lot of the human rights now. We'll be able to do it even more. We are pushing for greater transparency with Cuba, and I think that is going to come about. There'll still be a repressive, state-controlled place, but the more Americans come in there, the more that's going to break down. There will be more interaction, social media, and so on. The women in white will know that now they can walk openly to the American embassy and talk about their grievances. It will improve. Is it going to be a enormous overnight change? No. But it's a bigger change we've seen in 20 years, and it will accelerate. I'll go back down there in the spring or some point along here and get a better view. But I think I've had so many Vermonters who've called me and said, look, we usually drive to Montreal and fly down.
Right.
And ask them not to stamp our passport.
Yep.
And we worry that we're going to get in trouble. Now we can go there. The Smithsonian will be doing more with them, which will be extremely helpful to them in preserving things. Paul Bruin has talked about work he's done with some of the historic preservation people. I mean, there's a huge amount of historic Cuba that has to be preserved.
How many times have you been to Cuba?
Four. And I met with the Cubans probably 25 times.
Okay.
Either in Washington or New York.
I know our time is short here. Will you talk about this case of, is it Gerard or Gerard Hernandez?
And why
why you got involved with that and facilitating the impregnation of his wife? Not literally.
Thank you for including that. It was interesting. One of our visits, his wife asked to meet with me and with Marcel. It wasn't one of the official visits, and they made it very clear there's no need for us to meet him, but we were interested in her story. She talked to us. I knew the case of her husband. I'd reviewed the trial, which had some real problems in Florida. I knew everything involved with it. She was 40 or 41 at the time. She spoke to me at length, and then alone with Marcel, pleading that she wanted to, she loved her husband, she was afraid she'd never see him out of prison, but she wanted to have his baby, and could anything be done? And she said, will you ask your husband? And Marcel said, my husband has a good heart, but he'll have to make that decision. I went back, I talked it over with the president, with the attorney general. We found precedent for this in the in our prison system. She could be impregnated with his sperm. The Cubans would pay every bit of it. It would not cost American taxpayers anything. They did. Tried once, it didn't work. Tried a second time, and it did. They were charged with the shoot down of Americans in an American plane of brothers.
Yeah.
That was a terrible thing. It stymied for years any relationship with Cuba and the United States after that shootdown. I wish, it was a tragic thing, I wish there was some way to bring those people back. I wish they had not flown into Cuba after the United States had asked, even the president at the time, and said, please don't do that. I wish they hadn't. They had flown in there times before dropping leaflets over Havana. It was just a matter of time that they kept doing it, that the Cubans would react. You can imagine how we would be if Cuban planes were flying over Miami dropping things.
Yeah.
It might just be leaflets one time, but we don't know if it's going to be explosives the next time. And virtually everybody from the left to right in the United States would be saying, shoot them down. Well, it is unfortunate that our relations were so bad that somebody would have taken extreme action like this and risked their lives. And tragically, for their families, I mean, now their families don't have, there's no way they can bring back those people who were killed. And my heart goes out to them. But I do know that with this step that we did with her, following that, it dramatically improved the conditions for Alan Gross, the American who's being held prisoner. And aside from the big geopolitical part of it, it was worth doing it just for that.
Hmm. Last question. Well, I wonder if your name might get into that child's name, you know, boy or girl.
No, it's a girl. And she sent a beautiful letter to Marcel about it. And we were invited to the christening, but in Norton, that's not going to happen. But we will visit the family. And you know, I've had experience with some of these things before. I helped arrange with a Vermonter, Greg Craig, helped arrange for Alien Gonzalez to be returned to his father after he saw his mother drown while trying to escape Cuba. And I thought of that as being a family value thing. He had a father who loved him. He loved his father. He ought to have the chance to be with his father.
Yeah, it's funny you think about that case now with this change. I mean, it seems almost kind of silly.
Well, it does. And you see, that wouldn't have been happening now. His mother would still be alive if this had happened before.
Yeah.
But it's I've been, over this past weekend, been kind of bringing my daily journal up to date, and a lot of it I had to keep in a separate file because during time we were doing it a secret, and I just find hundreds of pages of memos and trips and visits. I even met with the foreign minister. I was on crutches with my leg in a splint from a hiking accident in Vermont, but I think if anything near impressed that I cared enough that I still showed up.
What are you going to do with that journal?
I think I may write a book this year. It's about time. I've got enough photographs and things like that that I'd really like to.
Really? Huh.
Give you a copy.
That might be an interesting book.
Well, we got some things that go all the way back to Jerry Ford and also a secret meeting that George H.W. Bush sent me on to Egypt and Jordan. And all these things are now being declassified, and I can write about them.
Last question. Do you see any way opening up Cuban relations gets shut down by Congress? And just give me some idea here, you know, on a scale, sort of a lifetime scale for you. I mean, how big a deal is this?
Well, it is a big deal. I rank it up with getting the Leahy War Victims Fund and the anti-landmine legislation through, and or being the author of the bill that started the whole organic farming. I think these are major points. Organic farming is now a $35 billion business in the United States. I think for our children and our grandchildren, it'll be an even bigger deal because it will improve our relations throughout Latin America. But it's not all done yet. I mean, there's still going to be a lot of steps, and we're still going to have a lot of two steps forward, one step back between the two countries. There's still going to be disappointments on both sides, but it's going to be a lot better than it was.
Merry Christmas. Thank you for your time today. I appreciate
Merry
it very
Christmas
much.
To you. Take care.
Senator Patrick Leahy talking about the normalization of relations with Cuba, or at least the attempt at that. We're going to take a short commercial break here. When we come back, we're going to talk a little Beatles. We'll do that right after this.
This is Susan Posobut from Granite Hills Credit Union wishing you and yours a joyous holiday season and a prosperous new